Today is Wednesday, April 10th. This is the women's chumash here. We're actually going to do some chumash, but related to the Haggadah.
Okay, Rabotai. This is a chumash class, but today, being so close to Yontov, we're going to learn chumash related to the Haggadah. So if you'll open up to Sefer Dvarim, Perek Chavav. Dvarim, Perek Chavav. Plenty of sheets.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, don't be sorry.
Take two?
Sure.
Thank you.
Right enough. Anybody needs a sheet? Okay. Okay. Dvarim Perek Chavav begins with the mitzvah Bikurim. V'haya ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you enter the land. So you're supposed to take v'lakach batene esatene biyadecha. You take this basket and you bring the first fruits v'hinicho lifnei Hashem elokecha. You bring them to the Beit HaMikdash. A kohen picks them up and does tinufa, waves them in a variety of directions, and then the kohen gets to keep the bikurim. It's one of the 24 matnot kehuna, one of the 24 gifts that are given to a kohen. So the pasuk then says that in addition to the actual bringing of the fruits themselves, you have to engage in a declaration. The declaration is called Mikra Bikurim. The reading, the declaration of the Bikurim. And this declaration has become a central theme in our Haggadah. The declaration itself will be read in its entirety in the Haggadah, in addition to the Midrash Rabbah, the Medrash's interpretations of each phrase of the four psukim of the declaration will be recited in the Haggadah. So the format will be, you recite the whole pasuk, and then you break it up, each phrase with its accompanying midrashic statement. So I want to look at some of the commentary on the declaration, primarily the first pasuk, but at the beginning of the unit, in the middle of pasuk gimel, it says, "Higadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha, ki bati el ha'aretz." Higadati hayom. Would you please like to translate the word higadati? Higadati? To tell. That's the simple in translation. Higadati hayom. I'd like to tell you today and acknowledge, thank you, ki bati el ha'aretz, that I've come to the land, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu had promised to our forefathers. And you take the Kohen takes the basket in Pasuk Dalid, and he places in front of the Mizbeach, and then the person who brings the Bikurim says, Ve'onisa ve'omarta, you raise your voice, and you say, Arami oiveravi, we'll get to it in a minute. The Rav once suggested that the word higadati has a different root. The standard translation is in every single chumash. Anybody have the chumash there? How do they translate the word higadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha? What?
And I shall say.
I shall say. Good.
I declare today.
But it's always saying something. And many people translate the word Haggadah, which we will read Pesach at night, as telling over the storm. Mm-hmm. So the Rav offered a little more sophisticated interpretation. If you open up to Vayikra chapter 5, verse 1. Vayikra chapter 5, verse 1. For a minute.
V'nefesh ki techeta.
Please read it out loud. You always read it beautiful. Good. This is talking about shivuat ha'edut, an oath that can be extracted against you if a person who has a complainant believes that you have relevant testimony on his or her behalf. So the Torah does not allow us to say, we finish Aran mission. I don't want to get involved. The Torah does not allow us to do that. And it compels you to come and testify. And if you claim I don't have any relevant testimony, you have to take an oath invoking God's name and holding the sacred Torah and say, I have no information that is relevant. Usually when you have to do that, you tell the truth. Because the alternative is asking God to strike you down. That's exactly what is in an oath. If I don't tell the whole truth, may God strike you down. That's what an oath is. So most people, in fact, our literature is full of cases where people, rather than admitting, rather than having to take an oath, they paid even though they were innocent. Not in this case, but there are other shivuot where you have to take an oath in order to declare your innocence. Just give one example. You claim you lent me $1,000. I admitted to $500. So, based on my admission, there were no witnesses. If there were witnesses, you don't need my admission. There were no witnesses. I admitted to $500, but I denied the other $500. So the Torah tells us in Parshat Mishpatim, I, to declare my innocence, have to take an oath that I only owe you the 500, not the 1,000. Many people, we have historical evidence, paid the 1,000 rather than invoke God's name, holding the Sefer Torah, saying, Rabbi Shloila, I'm innocent. Even though we were innocent, the mere experience of mentioning God's name, holding the Sefer Torah, was just too intimidating, and Chazal banked on it in terms of getting to the truth. They were real, the Torah banked on it. So here you have to take an oath, I don't know anything. So the rest of the parasha says if you turned out to be a liar, you have to bring a korban. Fine. But what does the word mean in lo yagid? In that mean? What does it mean? To testify, exactly. Hagadat eidut. Hold on a second.
That word.
That
on that
word, in modern Hebrew, I believe, ani agid odcha, right. Direct object, as opposed to ani agid lilcha, I will tell you. Ani agid odcha, I will tell on you. Okay.
I will turn you in.
Okay, that would be perfect. So you have Haggadah, suggested the Rav, that the word higadati, I know, is not just to make a declaration, but that you are offering testimony. Testimony can only be offered in a Jewish court if you were there personally. There is no such thing as hearsay entered into a Jewish court. So when we now read the Haggadah, as Rambam believes, we are not only supposed to say b'chol dar v'dar chayav adam lir'ot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza min Mitzrayim. It's leharot et atzmo, to demonstrate it ki'ilu hu yatza ayin tav hey. What is that next word? Ilu yatza ata, as if I went out in Mitzrayim right this minute. Ashav, exactly. So the Haggadah experience is designed not to be necessarily a story, but it's public testimony. I feel as if I have been delivered, and therefore I say Hallel, and so on and so forth. So one of the reasons why the Baal Haggadah We have no idea who composed our Haggadah. We know exactly where he got every single line in the Haggadah. It's mostly Mishnah, Midrash, Braita, very little story. It's mostly learning about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we have no idea who composed it. But the Rav suggested that the reason why he called his book the Haggadah was based on this understanding of Higat Yayom, and that is why this unit of Mikrab Mikurim became a centerpiece of the Haggadah itself. It is recited right after Vehisha Amda. So if you go to the next page, and you can see I numbered our packet today based on significant numbers at the Seder. Yes? At the Seder. Not baseball. Not baseball. Arba Banim, Lishonot Dula, Arba Kosot, Arba Imahot. Yes?
When the whole first book
there is a biblical commandment to retell the story. So in all probability, until the time of the Mishnah, where there was very little standardization, everybody made up their own Haggadah and told whatever they thought. In the time of the Mishnah, we already have, Rav Gamliel says, you have to say Pesach Matzah Marah. This one says, you have to say this. And then somebody, like I said, we don't know, put together all of these things and said, this is what you got to say.
Is there a physical copy, either in a Geniza or something that we know
of the ancient Haggadah?
Ancient that we know is the date.
Speak to the Geniza people. Paul Moshe Bernstein, anybody who's an expert in the Geniza. I'm not an historian. Ask Moshe Bernstein. He is an expert in the Geniza. He'll tell you he knows everything that was there. Fine. So if you open up to page 10, the Esser Makot on the next page, I just show you in the Haggadah where it appears. After the Hisha Amda, then say Umad, Ma Bikesh Lavan Harami. La Sot Yaakov Avin. So one thought, just, and I'm sure some of you have heard this, but most of you probably have not. The Braita, which he's quoting, opens up with the phrase Sei Ulamad. It's an unusual phrase. Sei, where are you going? Bo, right, means Bo Ulamad. So why use the word Sei? So I once suggested that it is borrowed from Parshat Noah, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Noah Sei Min HaTeva. Now, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Now, just imagine the following. You were in a boat with 500 animals for 150 days, and the water finally recedes. Do I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell me? Can I go out? I don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell me. Why did he have to say Menach Levan? Because philosophically, Noah had no interest in rebuilding life. No interest whatsoever in rebuilding life. Because he figured that just as God will have found cause to destroy the entire society that he had created just 10 generations earlier, he will find another excuse in another couple of years. So why bother creating, engaging in construction if it's only going to lead to destruction? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, what I do is my business. You have a responsibility to begin to recreate the world. And in fact, we know for a fact that Noah, even though he heard, and that's what the word say means, go out, I know what's running through your mind. You're hesitant to go out. And Noah, as you well know, did not respond positively to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mission. That's why he got drunk right away. A drunkard is a symbol of somebody who is not interested, just one second, in building for the future, just wants to drown his misery in liquor. Neither did his children believe that that would be the appropriate thing. Because there is a debate in the Masechet Sanhedrin, what exactly did Chum do unto Noah? So one of the interpretations was he castrated him. Why? Because he wanted to make sure that he doesn't have any more children. Because Chum believed exactly like his father did. I don't care what God says. I don't want you to populate this world again. So I suggest that after V'isha Amda, it's a wonderful phrase to begin the discussion of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because what does V'isha Amda say? Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu l'chal hasein. In every single generation, there are people who are coming to destroy us. And at times, people feel that it's just not worth to rebuild again. In our own generation, we all know of people who certainly abandoned, and God forbid for me to be critical, I have no right to be critical, who abandoned their commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after the Shoah and said, I don't care what you say, God, to rebuild, I'm not interested. Many had no interest in rebuilding physically, biologically, and many certainly spiritually were not interested. So the Baal HaGadda, whoever he is aware of this feeling. And hence, after you say Shalom Amar Aleinu Ela Bechol Dar Vadar and the Melech HaLaseinu, what other word has to be used? Say. I want you to go out. I want you to confront life again with all its difficulties. There might be somebody else rising to attack you in 5 years, next year. And that is a theme that is prevalent throughout the Haggadah. Yeah. And this theme of a recognition of the status of Am Yisrael at a time of tragedy, not like today, like we're looking, but it's not so long ago, 50, 60, 60, 70 years ago, is a prevalent theme in the Haggadah. I once told you, you should remember, if not I remind you, that is why the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Makom, is prominently used in the Haggadah. Prominently. It says, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, you remember this song, Baruch HaMakom, right? And also, Mitchila HaYoyevi Abuseinu, Ba'ashav Kervanu HaMakom La'avodata. Makom is one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it has a singular application. Singular application. The application is to be understood in light of a comparison between Yeshayahu and Yechezkel. Yeshayahu is the author of the phrase Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvaot, Melo Chol Ha'aretz Kivodav. That's Yeshayahu. He sees God every place. He lived at a time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and if he wanted to get inspired by contact with God, he walked into the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody, hopefully, would have sensed the presence of God. Therefore, when Yeshayahu is contacted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the very first time, he describes that encounter in two psukim. That's it. Two psukim, he describes what he feels like. And he says, no big deal, Melo Chol Ha'aretz Kivodav. Yechezkel, when he describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's first encounter with him, elaborates for two chapters. And he concludes with the phrase, Baruch Kivod Hashem Mimkomo. Mimkomo. What does that mean, Mimkomo? Mimkomo HaNistar. Wherever he's hiding, I acknowledge the presence of God. Yechezkel did not offer prophecy during the Beit HaMikdash. It was as the Beit HaMikdash was being burnt. And he is already with the rest of Am Yisrael, where? On the way to Babel. So when God comes to him, oh my God, this is Gilui Shechinah, divine revelation. And he can't stop talking about it. Can't stop talking about it. But then when God is leaving, he says, I never know if I'm going to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. I'll never see him. So it's Baruch Kivod Hashem Mimikomo, add the word HaNistar. Wherever he's hiding, I acknowledge his presence nonetheless. That is why in a Beit Avel, we greet the Avel, the name of God. But not with Hashem, not Elohim, not Tzvaot, not Shaddai. Hamakom Yinachem Etchem. May God, who is in hiding, if God was more ever present in this home, the tragedy would not have taken place. That's what we believe. That death is a symbol of Hester Panim. God somehow hiding, not exposing himself to this particular family. Every Monday and Thursday, after the Torah is read, we say Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, a famous song. And what do we say? Hanasum Batzom Eshivya, Olim Beit Mayami Beit Masha, Hamakom Yirachem. Why Hamakom? Because these people are sitting in jail. They're being taken captive. They don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's Hamakom Yirachem Malay. So Pesach at night, this Baal Haggadah is demanding of all Jews in all generations to put aside their difficulties and recognize tonight there is something to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. Even if I am sitting in a concentration camp, I still have an obligation, Pesach at night, to try to acknowledge the Yad Hashem. But it's Baruch HaMakom. I don't see any geulah sitting in a concentration camp. My dad, I don't see a much more. The Ashab Kervanu Hamatom La Abulasa. So this theme about recognizing where we might be spiritually, individually, and even more importantly as a nation, is a theme that repeats itself throughout this particular Balagada. And he said, Sayuma, Ma Bikesh Lava Noami La Aso Liakovami. So before we see his drash, which Rashi quotes, we're going to see the simple shot of this pasuk. Go back to page number four. Back to page number four. And I'm going to show you the Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, and the Chizkuni, who are not going to cite the Midrash that the Baal Haggadah quoted. But Rashi, of course, quotes the Midrash, like he always does. So look on the right-hand side, the Rashbam, the Avi HaPashtanim, says Rashbam, Arami Oved Avi. Who was Avi? Avi Avraham Arami Haya. This has nothing to do with Yaakov, says the Rashbam, Alpi Pshat. This is referring to Avraham. And what happened? Oved Vigole Me'eretz Aram. He was exiled from where? From Eretz Aram. Kidichsiv, as it is written. Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. Where was Avraham living at the time? In Aram Naharayim. That's his whole place. So my father, Abe, was a resident in Aram Naharayim, and he got lost. He was exiled to where? Vayeru and Mitzrayim. When did he go down to Mitzrayim? We read it when there was a famine. So this story is initiating the history of Am Yisrael's descent into the Mitzrayim, not with Yaakov and his children, but rather by Avram. And everything that happened to Avram, we read that in the Ramban, is a siman that will ultimately happen to his children. So we read the source of it initially. That's the simple interpretation, says the Rashbam, no chachma.
Why was he exiled?
There was a famine. He went down to Mitzrayim. We read it.
Mitzrayim.
He went to Mitzrayim.
It wasn't exile. But that's the same thing with Yaakov. He wasn't actually exiled.
Okay, so that, it's the word he uses. Okay. That's all. The word "ovei" really means wandering, lost. He says no. He's aimless. No direction. And even Avraham, he had no idea where he was going. And the Eretz Asher Arech, I'll tell you where it's at. But at the time when he travels, he has no idea. But that's Rashbam, the ultimate Pashtan. However, the majority of the Pashtanim do not believe it is a reference to Avraham, but it's a reference to Yaakov. But not in his interaction with Lavan. Not look at Chizkuni on the bottom of the page. Aram Yoibid Avi. Sarseyu. Just turn it around. Yaakov Avi. Hara'ami. Kishayahu Ba'aram. Hayavei. Perush ani velo mamon shelo haya muchzak ba'aretz. He said, even though it says arami ove avi sarseyu matzudrekas, read it backwards. Avi ha'arami ove. My father Yaakov was our father. Yaakov was ove, lost. In other words, totally poverty stricken. Totally poverty-stricken. And where was he poverty-stricken? On two occasions.
When?
Good, that's the Midrash. Eliphaz comes and says, my father said I gotta kill you. So he teaches him the halacha that an ani is chashuv kemes. That if you are poor, it's as if you're dead. Take all my money, so you have nothing left. That's one. But before he got to Lavan, as he's traveling from Eretz Canaan to Aram to go get to see safe harbor from Esav, what does he have on his way there? Nothing. Zero before he gets to Lavan's house. Nothing. So the simple pshat was, look how far we've come. My father, the origin of Am Yisrael, is poverty stricken, doesn't have a penny to his name, and look where we've come to up until now. We have our own land, I am producing fruits, I'm bringing the first fruits to you. That's the contrast according to the simple pshat. And the same thing on the left hand side, Ibn Ezra says the exact same thing. V'ilu, and he writes, he says, Arami Ovei, Milak Ovei, Mehape'alim, She'enam Yotzim. I have no idea what that means.
It's not a poem. It's not a
transitive. Okay, good, excellent. Not a transitive verb. V'ilu haya Arami al Lavan. If the intention was that Lavan, like the Medrash says, what should it have said? Haya HaKatuv Omer, Ma'avid, O Ma'abed. What does oveid mean? Lost, or lost. Not somebody who wants to destroy you. It's not somebody who wants to make you lost. It's not somebody who wants to destroy you. So therefore, the phrase arami oveid cannot refer to Lot, to whom? To Lavan. It has to refer to Yaakov, because Yaakov is just wandering around. But if it meant somebody's attempting to do an action, it should have said Arami Ma'avid Ovi Avi, or Me'abei, one of the two. He wanted to destroy. And therefore he acknowledges, yeah, the Medrash says that, but it's not the simple shot of the pasuk. However, take a look at Rashi. Rashi on the top left of the commentaries. In the second line, And then, Arami Oy Berabi, Lavan Bikesh La'akor Es Hakol. Kishiradav Achar Yaakov. Lavan wanted to kill Yaakov when he ran after Yaakov. Ubishvil Shechashav La'asot. And because he contemplated this, Chashav Lo Hamakom Ki'ilu Asa. God considered it as if he did it. She'umo ha'olam. Because by the nations of the world, Choshev Lohem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machshavah Kima'aseh. Not by Am Yisrael, it is only by them he considers an action to do, an attempt, a thought to do something as if they had already done it. And indeed, the Vilna Gaon writes that this medrash has no biblical source whatsoever. The fact that he wanted to destroy Yaakov Avinu. No way. What episode is he describing?
He's describing the thing of the Gal.
Correct.
What's the terminology of the Gal?
The Eid Hagal Hazeh. I'm going to get to that in a second. You heard that already. Good.
I heard it from you.
I know. I know. I'm going to repeat it for the benefit of others. However, the context is Yaakov sneaks away in the middle of the night without saying goodbye to him. Now just imagine you and me. Our children and grandchildren are here for Yontif, and then after Yontif, in the middle of the night, they just sneak out and take a cab to Newark Airport. Don't even say goodbye. Nothing. And it's worse yet. Lavan had no idea they're going to Newark Airport. I know that they're going to Newark Airport. Just disappear. I can't blame him for running after Yaakov to see them. There's no indication that he planned on what? On killing them. Yes?
Destroying could have been financially. In other words, while Yaakov was working for him, he tried all kinds of different ways of, taking advantage of him.
But did he succeed?
No.
Okay, he did try to take advantage of, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't allow it. And how did he walk away after 20 years? Enormous cattle and flock. That dream that he had with the spotted sheep. Nobody knows scientifically how that worked, but he had hundreds of sheep. He made his deal with all of them. Yeah, no problem. I'll take the spotted ones. Fine. Nobody knows, but whatever it is, there's no indication in the text whatsoever. And as I said, the Gaon said, there is no text. Right. So I want to share with you the Rav's interpretation. How the text does indicate how Arami Oy Berabi. So if you open up to Parshas Vayetze for a minute, in Sefer Bereishis, it is Perek Lamed Aleph of Sefer Bereishis. So if you look at Perek Lamed Aleph, and in Pasuk Bet, it says, Vayar Yaakov et Bnei Lavan, V'hinei Einenu Imo Kimoshu Shem. Yaakov suspects something. Not looking at me the same way. I had no idea what's running through his mind. And he tells his girls, you know what? I noticed some change, and I work. Then go to. Go to Pasuk. Then Gimel. And we will then take Pasuk Ben Gimel
and we'll follow it through and through.
Perek
Lamed Aleph, same Perek.
This is after Lavan, a couple of days later, he reaches Yaakov and he says, what does he say in Ben Gimel? What does he say? What you do to me? Habalo minotai. This is all belongs, everything belongs to me. How could you run away?
Because the children belong to
him. Well, he's the grandparent. The boys, the girls, the choma sherata roel lihu. This is all mine that I help you amass. What are you running away for? So what happens? Lavan says, the cha v'nichrita berim aniva ata. Let's make a copy. Let's make a copy. So it doesn't sound like he wants to kill anybody. Let's make a copy. So there are two types of covenant, says the Rav. One type of covenant is, you know what? We're an association. We're together. An attack on you is an attack on me. We can interact with one another. We can live a common life. We can share, exchange culture, and so on and so forth. That's Lavan's perception of the covenant. Yaakov says, oh, I'd love to make a covenant, but a much different type of covenant. You stay over there, I stay over here, and we have nothing to do with each other for the rest of our lives. The rest of our lives. So each one of Yaakov and Lavan, as they make the covenant, is going to engage in a symbol that reflects their understanding of the covenant. Their understanding of the covenant. So what does Yaakov take as the covenant of the symbol? What does he take? Vayikach Yaakov, Eben, one stone. One stone, that's going to create a barrier between me and my friend Lava, my father-in-law Lava. And what did they take?
Lots of stones.
Lots of stones and gather them together. That means I'm not looking to create a barrier. I'm looking to establish what? A merged union between you and me. Yaakov, the Torah then, the Pasuk later says, that Lavan called it Yigar Sahaduta and Yaakov called it Gal Eid. So Rashi says that the word Yigar Sahaduta is simply the Aramaic translation of the word Gal Eid. What does Gal mean? The mound is testimony as to what this represents. Yigar, according to this, means the same thing. The Rav felt it's not the same thing. Yigar means the act of gathering the stones should be sahaduta. Sahaduta means edut. It's the Aramaic word for the word edut. So what is the edut of what this covenant represents? The gathering of the stones. We are merging into one great family. Yaakov says, I'm calling this gal eid. The noun, not the gathering. The barrier is the essence of testimony as to what this covenant represents. Represents. Read a couple of psukim later. I'll tell you what pasuk it is. A couple of psukim later, where it says, yes, pasuk Nun Gimel. Nun Gimel. Who does Lavan invoke as the God who should now testify or affirm this covenant? Elohei Abraham ve'Elohei Nachor. Who was Nachor? Abraham's brother. He was an idolater.
That was the last point of contact.
Exactly. And Abraham was an idolater before he found out what Nachor had to do. That's who I am invoking. Vayishova Yaakov b'fachad aviv Yitzchak. Yaakov takes an oath about who's going to document and affirm this. I'm not even mentioning Avraham's name. Because Avraham was an idolater. You can get the wrong impression. I want this oath to be affirmed by the God of Ike. Vayishova Yaakov b'fachad aviv Yitzchak. I got nothing to do with you anymore. Just one more sentence. Then Yaakov goes ahead, and the Torah says, Vayizbach Yaakov. What does the word Vayizbach mean? He shechted. That's what it means. Zvicha is the Masechet Zvachim, is the Masechet that tells you about Shechit of Korbanot. Says the Rambam, Yaakov Avinu never observed all of the mitzvot when he was in Chutz La'aretz. Yaakov observed Taryak mitzvot only when he got in Eretz Yisrael. That is part of the Ramban's theory as to why one of the two sisters had to die before they got back into Eretz Yisrael. Because you can't be married to two sisters during the course of their lifetime. So when he was in Galus, no problem, I don't observe the Torah. In Eretz Yisrael, we don't know why it happened in Rahel, we have no idea. But anyhow, that's the Ramban's theory. So why did he the Dafka Shecht here? Why did he shecht? Why didn't he just kill the animal? Why did he have to shecht? He's not observing mitzvot. The answer is, he wanted to make a point. One of the functions of the laws of Kashrut, and this is documented in the Chumash and Sefer Shmot, the Parashat, is to establish separation, social separation between Jew and Gentile. Because social interaction is always accompanied, often initiated, by the presence of food. You present food, everybody comes to the shiur. You don't have food, nobody comes. But I know, that's what you guys are eating. Without any cookies, but with a kiddush, all of a sudden people come. Just go to the Hamptons. Right? People who are not yet shown shabbos. 1,000 of them will come. Half of them wouldn't come without that magnificent kiddush afterwards. It's no doubt. No doubt about it. The Torah says so. So why is he doing it? I'm here alone. I'm keeping to my laws. You eat what you want. We're not interacting. Said the Rebbe, if Lavan had succeeded in convincing Yaakov of what he thought the covenant was all about, that would have been the end of Am Yisrael. If Yaakov would have agreed to Lavan that we can live culturally together, we can live as one big happy family, and then there would be interaction. Not only social interaction, but marriage interaction. That would be the end of Am Yisrael. So Lavan bikesh la'akor et hakol. When did Lavan? Right here in the text. By his understanding of what the covenant was all about, that could have been the demise of Am Yisrael. So as opposed to suggesting that he wanted to kill him physically, which there is, and that the girl is right, there's nothing in the text that seems to indicate he wanted to kill him. He came running at him because Yaakov left in the middle of the night, wanted to say goodbye to his kids and to his grandchildren. But spiritual death is just as painful a death for Am Yisrael as physical death. And that you can read as we just read through the text of this story, how we can interpret this particular idea and confirm Rashi's interpretation. Arami Ove, Arami is Lavan, at Yaakov, and not Avram, and he wanted to kill him. Arami Ove of it. Yeah.
So the. Where is it? Okay. Lavan says. You should put two meanings. I thought that Abraham, that what he was doing was combining to the two gods.
Good. That's perfect. You could say that too.
Okay.
You can say, that's perfect. That's fine. It's the God of Abraham when he became our leader. But he's going to live together with his brother, Nahor. Yes?
Just what you
said. 100%. 100%. Yes?
The thing is that Abraham makes a bridge with Abimelech.
Yes.
Right.
And
the next thing is the Akedah. There's something about that now I want you to be the witness. I want to make sure that this brick that you're making is a brick that I'm still your God.
I forgot who said that. Or was it one of the Rishonim or one of the modern day scholars that the Akedah Yitzchak was a punishment to Abraham for having made too comfortable an agreement with Abimelech? Precisely. That is exactly it.
Well, you see this in general, even in modern day.
What?
Modern day Israel, when we do this. I mean, I don't want to say that in that way, but when we make a bridge with our enemies, it doesn't always turn out to be the best.
I know. We're not going to comment. This is going to be the next finance. But you know what the most shocking thing is? That they have not groomed one other person to take over.
Right.
Not one person. Bennett didn't get one lousy seat.
Oh, they didn't make the threshold.
He didn't make the threshold. Unless they count, they have 14,000 soldier votes to count by tomorrow. So they hope that'll make a difference. And if he does, it'll kick out the Arab party completely. They're going to be below them. That would be a double blessing. But that's just unbelievable. There's nobody. He's there 13 years. He made his contribution. You'd think we'd like to have a new face. Even if you have the same ideas, but at least a new Putin. Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned the word Bethesda. You're talking about Yeshayahu. I didn't get, is that part of the word, one of the words, or is that something?
No, Yeshayahu.
Yeah, we're talking about Yeshayahu and like the words of the
Kedusha. Yes, the Kedusha. Below Chol Ha'aretz Kivoda.
You mentioned the Sekhter.
The Sekhter? No, that was Yeshayahu. And the word Minkomo. Min Kolmo, from his place. What place is he in? A place that we can't see. We can't identify. Because we're in Galut, and that symbolizes Hester upon Israel. Yes.
Many years ago, many years ago, because you gave a shear in Phoenicia and in the basement. And you said that.
Okay.
The Beta B was that when Eliezer came to.
That's another Medrash.
Right.
That is correct.
Correct.
That is another Medrash, which is so far-fetched, I didn't want to mention it.
Right.
I did. Okay. I used to teach all the time.
35 years ago.
Before there was a Rina.
Right.
Before the B'nai Shur. Yes. Yeah. So there is a Medrash that says that when Eliezer came to get a wife for Yitzchak, Eliezer wanted to that Yitzchak should marry his daughter. And he was a little upset that Abraham, and obviously, she was living right there, he didn't recognize it. So what happened was, he arranged to, who did he want to poison?
No, Laban wanted.
Oh, Laban wanted to poison Eliezer.
So this deal wouldn't happen.
And what happened was, the Malach switched the plates, and Laban, Vesuel, his father died. Laban's father ate the poison. Gone. Now, what would have happened, here's the question. What would have happened if Eliezer had consumed the poison? Then, Yitzchak would never know to whom he was engaged. He would never know. And the halacha would be, that any other woman who he contemplated marrying would be in violation that I'm marrying her sister. I was already engaged to that girl. I don't know who she is. So this girl who I'm getting, I can't get married to any girl. Except whom? Eliezer. Eliezer's daughter is definitely not related to anybody else because I know who Eliezer's children are. I know. But anyhow, that's how he tried, Laban tried to what?
to get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Okay, but that's a far-fetched message. Good. Yes, question.
I think the hint that Lavan wanted to hurt them when they were leaving is when he says, Maya Selaewa. So it's like, you ran away because I know you think, you claim that I'm going to hurt you, but I'm not. So I want to be your friend, which is saying, I want to destroy you in a more subtle way, really.
Okay, yes, very good, very good. Now, if you just go for a second go to page 3, Shlosha Avot. But actually, before you go to page 3 for a second, if you go back to page number 4, I want to show you one more Rashi, which will explain a departure, a various departure of a minhag about the Haggadah. How many people here have one person recite the Haggadah aloud and everybody else just listens? How many people have that practice? How many people recite the Haggadah, everybody, together? Overwhelming majority. Okay.
Isn't it what?
Each person takes turns. Then it's only one person at a time. I mean, as opposed to saying the whole Haggadah together. In an Amud what?
You all say it, but not say it aloud.
So they say it? They say it. Good.
Okay, so when you say one person, you don't mean the same person from the
Haggadah. No, I don't mean it. A leader, and everybody else is listening.
Yeah. Oh.
So I want to show you what Rashi makes a reference to something that will determine this minhag. If you look at Pasuk A in the Rashi, the one right above Aram Yodhi, where the Pasuk says, Ve'anisa. Ve'omarta in Pasukhei, Lifnei Hashem Elokecha. You will say, and you will say, in the presence of God, what will you say? Here we have to read, Aram Yehavidah. So Rashi asks the question, the Medrash, the Gemara asks him, what do you mean, Ve'anisa, Ve'omarta? Could have said, Ve'anisa, Lifnei Hashem, you will answer or say, Ve'omarta, Lifnei Hashem, what do you mean, both? Answers Rashi, Lashon Haramakho. Nazal Harim Kol, raise your voice. Say it loudly. The text, this declaration of the Bikurim by the owner of the fruits in the Beit Hamikdash, cannot be mumbled under your breath. You have to say it out loud. Now, since we use the model of this particular mitzvah as part of the mitzvah of Sifat Yetzias Mitzrayim, therefore the halacha of Haramas Kol applies to the reading of the Haggadah itself. And here comes one of the halakhic, you'll say this, nobody will notice it. You're hearing it here for the first time. How is it that if you listen to somebody else, right, everybody's reading it, how are the rest of us yotzei the mitzvah of saying, of the mitzvah of Sifu Yitzis, how are we yotzei the mitzvah? Shomea ke'onet. That if you hear, it's as if you're saying. However, there is an opinion that says that if there is an additional halacha besides the saying, there is an additional halacha, you cannot use the principle of Shomer Ka'oneh. Shomer Ka'oneh is only available if the definition of the mitzvah is to say something. But it's to say something in this way, that way, this, with other. The principle doesn't apply. I'm going to give you the illustration. How many people here daven in a shul where they got to the Aseres B'nei Haman and the tzibur said it in advance of the Kehillah? In advance of the Kehillah. Many shuls did that. We not, we all do it. Why some shuls do it? Because there is a halacha that those 10 names of Haman's children have to be recited b'neshima achas, in one breath. That's why he takes a deep breath and he runs to Aseres. Why? I don't know. But it has to be b'neshima achas. So some claim, as I just stated, if the rest of the Megillah just has to be read, but those 10 names have to be read the Neshima Achas. Neshima Achas can't be communicated via Shomea Ke'oneh. So in order to be Yotze, those 10 words, what has to happen? Everybody has to say it themselves. And that's what they do. That's what people do. Even if you don't have a kosher Megillah. Because if you read part of it by heart from a Chumash, as long as the majority is read from a regular Megillah, you're Yotze the Mitzvah. So you will Yotze those names yourself, then the Baal Koreh says it, and the Yotze. The other shuls, like in Rina, we don't accept that provision. And if there is Shomea Ke'oneh, you can be Yotze even if there are attachments to it, such as Neshima Achas. The same thing is true by the Haggadah. The Haggadah has to be read not just has to be read Kol Rom cannot be communicated to someone else via the principle of Shomer Ke'oneh. That's why in some families everybody reads the Haggadah to themselves. So that the leader is just there for pacing or whatever it else, but it can't be motzi anybody else via the principle of Shomer Ke'oneh. Hence, everybody reads. And in families where they do not read, where there is just one reader, they obviously believe that the principle of Shomer Ke'oneh can work effectively even if there is another principle, another halakha attached to it. And here the attachment is Haromas Kol Rav. That's why, if you ever, there was a question asked whether a Kohen can fulfill his obligation of Birkat Kohanim through Shomer Ke'oneh. He'll stay here with us, and the fact that one Kohen recites Birkat Kohanim, he'll be motzi me. And we say no, because the halacha of Birkat Kohanim is also the Kol Rav. He can't mumble it under his breath. So we say that every Kohen has to get up there and do it. Yeah?
Isn't the Pesach Matzamara of this section that really has to be said aloud together? Could that be referring to that section?
It could, but whatever is the basic requirement, those guidelines apply. Some say that the bare minimum, that is true, the bare minimum is those three paragraphs. So they will have a different practice just for those three paragraphs. That's possible. That is possible. Anyhow, let us read the Nitziv, and then we'll conclude. On page 3, in the middle of the page where it says Pasuk Hey, the line below where it says Arami Eved Avi, and the next phrase is Vayeru Mitzrayim, says the Nitziv. This is the Nitziv's commentary on the Mashma'ot HaLashon. The meaning of this phrase seems to indicate Shebishvil Shahaya Arami Oved Avi Al Kain Yarad Mitzrayim. It looks like that there is a cause and effect in this particular phrase. Arami Oved Avi. Therefore, Vayeru Mitzrayim. But who cares? That's puzzling. What connection is there between Arami Oved Avi and the fact that Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim? Elakach hakeirush al pi the isa b'psachan reish perak ha'isha re'uyin Yisrael lihiyot golin le'aram. Yaakov deserved to be exiled to Aram. Deserved to be exiled to Aram. We'll see. U'kishira HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aksorio shel Aram Omad Veheglon Libavel. And instead, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He sent them to Babel, which were not such cruel people. Not such cruel people. So, the rest of the Netziv is based on this Gemara, which talks about Bayit Rishon. After Bayit Rishon, they should have been sent to the Armenians, Aram, and they were sent to the Babylonians instead, because the Armenians were unusually cruel. Claims the Netziv, that's exactly the connection between Arami Oved Avi and Vayered Mitzrayim. That really they were supposed to go Galut. Where was Yaakov supposed to do his Galut? By Lavan. In Aram. But they were so cruel. Now Lavan was so cruel to Yaakov that what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide? This is going to be much too tough. What am I going to do? I'm going to send them to Mitzrayim. So yes, there is a cause and effect. Arami Oved Avi. My father was destined to go to be in Aram. But they were so cruel. Therefore, by Yehra and Mitzrayim. In what respect were they so cruel? So the Medrash fills in. Shebikesh Ya'ak Lavan La'akoret Akol. He wanted to wipe them out. Now, was Mitzrayim any better? Was Mitzrayim better than Aram? Difficult shot. Very difficult. In fact, I mentioned last night that one of the explanations of Charoset is not just to remember the tit, the cement, which was used to connect the bricks, but based on the Midrash, that Paro instructed all the babies to be put into the cement, and the bricks would crush them one against the other. That's what was running in Paro's mind. So, and Paro's plan was, but this I include, Paro's plan was that if you want to terminate a nation, killing the adults is not the formula. If you kill the kids, then you're guaranteed to eradicate the people. See, he came up with a variety of ideas. In Ben Hu, he told the midwives, if there is a boy, kill him. Kol ha-bein ha-yilod, ha-yo-ru tashlichu, throw him into the Nile. Put the babies here, and he didn't distinguish between boys and girls in this case. That's why I said why children play such a major role at the Seder. Because it is the counterpoint of what was running through Paro's mind. Paro wanted to eradicate Am Yisrael by attacking their children. If we have children, if we are zochet to have children at our Seder table and can participate, the mere fact that they come is symbol enough that they're still connected. That is the ultimate guarantee that whoever wants to destroy us is never going to succeed.
And that's why Eliyahu was there.
That is correct. Yes, correct. Okay, one more count. Next Wednesday, how many people are capable of coming to the show? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'll give a shit. Let's come to the show. No problem.